Hi, I'm Jessica Murphy, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us on this telephone town hall. We have a very informative hour ahead. Before I turn it over to Senator Jay Costa, we are still waiting for some more neighbors to join us on this call. Again, thank you for joining this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us on this telephone town hall with Senator Jay Costa. As a reminder, if you have a question that you'd like to submit to ask Senator Costa, please press 0 on your keypad. Again, press 0 to submit a question to tonight's discussion. We have call screeners available to take down your name and neighborhood and your question. Again, press 0 on your keypad to submit a question to tonight's discussion. As we wait for a few more constituents from the 43rd District, we again thank you for joining us tonight on tonight's telephone town hall, and we look forward to your questions. Again, press 0 on your keypad to submit to our screeners, and we will log your question, and then you can go live with the senator. Without any further delay, let me introduce Senator Jay Costa.
Well, thank you very much, Jessica, and I want to thank folks for participating tonight on this important discussion that I think is certainly taking place here in the Pittsburgh-Allegheny County region, but all across our Commonwealth and across our country. I appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion with constituents in the 43rd District. As many of you know, we like to have these telephone town hall meetings, and we do them 3 or 4 times a year, and I really thought right now this was a relevant topic, particularly given the fact that we're in Harrisburg this month of June. We will be there for the rest of the month, and we probably have the remaining, 15 or 18 days of the week. We'll be up in Harrisburg, probably 15 of those days at a minimum, not only discussing these type of issues, but also budget conversation as well. And obviously, I'm open to discussion along those lines. And some of this discussion, I think, will lead into conversation about resources in a particular area. As the leader of the Democratic Senate, I work closely with my colleagues to draft a number of measures that we think are appropriate. And as the course of the evening goes on, I can interject some of the things that we are doing in this space, in this violence prevention space, crime prevention space, and also looking at issues along the lines of mental health and community violence programs, and certainly the manner in which folks have access to weapons. That's a concern to a lot of our members across Pennsylvania, and I know it's something that I hear about every day from the folks in our communities. So with that all being said, I'd like to really go, because I know we already have, Jessica, about 5 or 6 questions that were submitted to us earlier today through the emails, and if we can just jump into those, and that'll give folks time to queue in some questions for us and have a conversation with folks on the line. So you want to start with some of those questions?
Yep, we will dive right in. And again, for folks on the phone, if you'd like to submit a question and speak to Senator Costa, you can press 0. Our first question comes from Pamela on the south side in Pittsburgh, and she wrote in to she'd like to know what plans are in place to curb shooting in the south side.
Again, that's a very timely question, and I will tell you that I've been working closely with Representative Jessica Benham, Mayor Ganey's office, and also Councilman Bruce Krause, but also the Pennsylvania LCB, Liquor Control Board, and also the State Police and the LCE, and certainly the Pittsburgh Police as well. I think over the course of this coming weeks, you'll see a much increased presence to try to address some of the concerns that are taking place there. So I think that's going to be something you're going to see as we go forward. Also communicating a lot with the community. I was there Memorial Day and spent a good bit of the Memorial Day morning visiting, obviously, some of the Memorial Day sites, and had a chance to talk to some of the business owners there who have also taken a very strong lead in trying to address the situation. So while I can't reveal exactly what's going to happen this weekend, just know that there are some things that will take place, an enhanced presence both at the local and state level that I think will try to stem some of the violence that's there. On the LCE side, liquor control enforcement side, I think we have to do, quite frankly, a better job of managing how folks are dispersing from these facilities and to what degree they are interacting with people who are coming to the south side, just to come to the south side to hang out on Carson Street, who aren't old enough to go into the establishments. And certainly we have to monitor who's going into these places as well. But at some point, we have to address the high concentration of liquor bars in particular that exist on the south side. The concentration It's probably the highest concentration of light liquor license in any part of the Commonwealth. And when you think about that narrow corridor, it's really just a recipe for bad things to happen as they've been happening over the course of the past several weeks. So there's some things we have to do. Some things are going to be in the works. But I think it's going to require a lot of community discussion with certainly the Southside business groups, but also and the business owners, but also police and community groups as well to assist.
Great. Our next question is from Cheryl from Oakland. She asked, we hear so much about mental health when violence and mass shootings occur. While I agree that's part of the problem, I'm always curious as to what can be done to better address that problem.
That's a great question because I do believe that in many instances, mental health issues for that individual is a concern and something is relevant. So there are a couple things that we're working on. This Monday and Tuesday, we put into place something called a discharge petition. My colleague, Senator Fontana in particular, has put together legislation that you've probably heard a lot about, red flag laws and a red flag type of thing. It's an emergency protection order, which will essentially remove a weapon temporarily from an individual who is either harmed to themselves, perceived to be harmed to themselves, or to others. And there's a process where you go to court and that would all play out. So that is something that we're working on legislatively that can be done. We already do that in domestic violence situations, and there's no reason why we can't extend it to this situation when someone has presented themselves with a mental illness crisis or some type of a mental crisis that deserves this type of process. The second thing we have to do, and again, with something we're advocating for, is we have to put more resources into mental health programs, community mental health programs, and our school mental health programs. I put legislation in as part of the School Safety and Security Commission that we drive out about $60 million a year through that program the last 3 years to allow for each school district, if they choose to use their allocation for the purposes of having a school psychiatrist or school psychologist or social worker, whatever, to be in that space. While a lot of schools use those dollars to harden their schools, you know, metal detectors and bars on the windows, et cetera, schools are now moving more and more towards bringing in counselors and the like to work with the students experiencing some of the issues. So we need to put more resources there. What I proposed on the Senate floor just the other day was putting a significant amount of money from the American Relief Plan for the next 18 months, the next 24 months into that program, the school safety program, specifically designating a specific amount for our schools to be able to do that. So every school district, every school building has at least one counselor, one psychiatrist, psychologist to address some of the needs that are taking place there. That's one thing. We also need to go back and restore the resources that came out of the what I'll call community mental health programming. We have a lot of great providers in mental health spaces that we need to be able to provide them the resources to be able to do more and meet more folks. Back in 2011, we took $80 million out of that budget, out of that line item in the budget all across Pennsylvania. And we've only restored maybe a third of it, if not maybe close to a half of it. But every year we didn't restore all of it, with less money making its way to our community providers. And we see the consequences of that, whether it's in hospital situations, whether it's in the criminal justice system, or whether it arises in situations that we hear about in terms of gun violence. So we have to put more both in school money, school programming, and also community programming as well. I think that's the second thing we can do. So specifically with firearms, it would be the red flag law, the emergency protection order. But then also it's important to note that removing weapons from individuals when they're dealing with a crisis is not only related to any, whether it be mass shootings or shootings in schools, but it also deals a lot with suicides. A lot of folks who are in crisis end up taking their life by weapon, by gun. And if we can remove that weapon from that situation, many, many lives can be saved. And I think that's one of the things we have to look at. And particularly right now when it's young adults and our veterans that are unfortunately committing suicide, we need to take steps to be able to remove access. It's about access to weapons that I think is the concern, and that's what these emergency risk protection orders do along those lines.
Great. Thank you, Senator. And a reminder to everybody on the call, if you'd like to submit a question to tonight's discussion about gun violence and community-based violence, press 0 to ask a question. We do have a caller, Dolores. Dolores, you are live with the senator.
Senator Clark, I have a question for you. We have a lack of respect between the Democratic and Republican Party. We have a lot of black American, African-American young men with weapons shooting one another. What kind of a program is established to keep these boys off the streets and girls, if there are some there, something that they could get into, like a boys club or something, someone who would be in charge of having activities for these young people to get interested and to learn respect for themselves and for the state or in the country, the area they live in, and for one another?
Thank you, Lord. That's a great question. We, first and foremost, we have to work in a community level, the grassroots level. And there are a number of organizations that are doing that in the Pittsburgh and Allegheny County area. In our district, I know there are several that do good work, whether it be down in the Woodland Hill School District or whether it be over in Homewood. There are groups that are out there doing exactly that. They're working with the families, they're working with the kids to be able to get them to appreciate and value life and value someone else's life. And that's day-to-day activity. It's day-to-day work along those lines. We got to provide more resources to have more programs for more people to work in this space to be able to do that. And when I mentioned earlier about providing resources through the school safety program, a significant portion of that school safety and security program also provides money for what I'll call community violence prevention programs. Every year we do about $12 to $15 million in that fund, and we drive it out to these organizations that do this work. We got to do more of that. Last year, we put $30 million into community violence program. We have to, at a minimum, repeat that and actually provide more and really focus and concentrate on those areas that are where there's a high incident of these type of crimes you're talking about and this type of violence. So it's a function of developing programs, investing in more programs, getting the resources to the community so the community can do the things that need to be done. And it's resources to do the things that we used to do, you know, when I was much younger, you know, whether they be basketball leagues, whether they be youth athletic leagues, whether they be programming, after school program, weekend programming, and having mentors there as part of it. There's so many mentoring organizations that are out there that do really good work, and they're close to the community. We need to invest in those folks to be able to continue to doing what they're doing. The more we invest, the more tools we give them, the better off we'll be long term, and to be able to be better able to, you know, provide folks with this appreciation and value for life and another person's life. That's a great question. Thank you, Dolores. Jessica?
Great. So next we have Irma. Irma, you are live with Senator Costa.
Yes, I had two questions, actually. And yes. The first one is, why can't assault rifles just be banned totally in this country? Other countries have done it, and it did seem to work better than what we have to offer, which is nothing. The second question is, why is the Port Authority wasting so much money to rebrand themselves when nothing's actually changing except a name? But to rebrand, you have to spend a lot of money to change every little aspect, your letterheads, your paperwork, your signs, and then you're going to recolor the buses and everything. That seems like such a waste of money. And I want to know, how much is that going to cost, and who's going to pay for that?
So I will tell you, it's a great question. Let me first start with assault weapons. You're exactly right. That's exactly what's going on. We have to stop folks from being able to purchase assault weapons, particularly when they turn 18. We had a minimum increase the age to 21. But I personally don't see the need for an individual civilian to have one of these type of weapons, and I'll never understand that. When we had an assault weapon ban in this country, we had fewer of these type of incidents taking place. That's a fact. I will support, and one of the questions that came in earlier today was my position on assault weapons. I will support legislation to ban assault weapons. I think that's the direction that we need to go as a Commonwealth and as a country. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be an uphill battle because a lot of folks think that we're infringing upon their Second Amendment right. I will say anything that we're proposing or I'm supporting will not infringe on anyone's right to be able to bear arms as a responsible or reasonable citizen. But assault weapons, I just don't understand the need for them. And the impact that they provide in these situations, when you hear some of the horrific stories that came out of Texas last week, the destruction of human beings with these weapons, I can't comprehend what it was like, and I can't imagine what the first responders had to deal with along those lines. So we have to do that. We have to get rid of that, and I support that. The question about Port Authority, I'm not sure why they've rebranded. I guess there's a method to their madness. I don't know. I'm told that it's going to cost about $700,000 through this process, and I believe that, quite frankly, it's going to be folks who pay the bus, pay the bus fares. It's going to be some of the state and local and county money, federal money that's provided to be able to pay for that. But I'm not certain how it's being paid for. I don't think it's being paid for by foundations or anybody like that. So I just can't speak to who's paying for it. But it's coming out of their budget, and their budget is largely a public resources. And you raised a good question, Irma, about that.
Great. Thank you, Irma. Next, we have Bob from Swissvale. Bob, you are live.
Good evening, Jay. Bob here. More of a
Bob.
Statement than a question, other than I really am fearful of our congressional leaders in Congress who are sitting on their hands while we're watching our children die. I'm a grandfather. I'm an ex-Vietnam veteran. I have seen the carnage an M16 can do, and what our congressional leaders are doing is virtually nothing. And my fear is for my children and my grandchildren, as are many of our citizens, that unfortunately nothing is going to happen until something catastrophic happens in the backyard of some of our congressional leaders. And at that point, again, there's going to be a mother in tears, a family broken, children absolutely distraught who will never be the same, all because these people won't get off their ass and do what's necessary. That's about all I got.
Well, thank you. I think, you raise a good point. I can tell you that the Congress, the House of Representatives, I think today or will be or has today passed comprehensive gun reform measures, which I think included an assault weapon ban. The problem is that it's not going to pass the United States Senate, and therein lies the problem. We have to get more like-minded folks in the U.S. Senate to get to the number that they need to pass this legislation. And you're right. Until it happens in their backyard, like it happened in our backyard, folks won't wake up and say that this is something that we have to stop and prevent and be thoughtful and be reasonable about what we're trying to do. Again, we're not trying to take weapons away from those law-abiding folks. But we have to have some reasonable limitations on access, and I think that's what we're talking about here. Most significantly, would be the most significant changes that would take place. And I think that until that happens, you're right, until we bring like-minded people together in the Congress, the whole Congress, we're not going to see much action done. I'm hopeful that the U.S. Senate will take it up this coming week, but I don't remain optimistic. So, again, when I reiterate, back in the day when Clinton was president, we had an assault weapon ban that expired. And since that time, things have changed. And it's just a question of access and how old you need to be to have access, et cetera, or even the need for these type of military-style weapons in the hands of civilians. I just don't get it. But that's a great question. Thank you very much. And I think, we just got to elect more like-minded people.
Great. And a reminder to everybody on the call, if you'd like to speak with the senator tonight and submit a question, you can press 0 and speak with one of our screeners. That's press 0 to submit a question. Next, we have Lacey. Lacey, you are live. Lacey, are you there?
Hi, Lacey.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello, yes.
Hi, Lacey.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for staying
Wonderful.
On the call.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if you're aware of any plans such as gun buyback.
That we've seen in the city of Pittsburgh and surrounding areas.
Yeah, I participated and helped get some grants for some community programming on the gun buyback programs, and I think they're very helpful and they're very successful. I know Wilkinsburg Police Department does a great job working with communities to be able to do that, and we did one in Rankin last winter, and resulted in a number of weapons coming in. And we did have support from one of the local foundations, and we've done a couple of those the last several years. I do think they make a lot of sense, and they're very helpful, and we need to do more of that. I mean, getting these weapons out of the hands of homes where they don't need to be. And, you know, sometimes folks don't realize they inherit them and they linger in the home, and sometimes, you know, they make it into the hands of the wrong folks. I will continue to support those programs, as well as a variety of other programs that are going to help limit access to weapons for the folks who, A, don't need them, B, should not be around them, given this mental health crisis, or other circumstances. But thank you, Lacey, for the call.
And next we have Brenda. Brenda, you're live.
Hello.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I want to say that I'm concerned about the fact that we have inequity funding in various school districts, which causes failing schools and lack of preparation for the children to go into the workforce or even into college or training programs. And I'd like to see, and I believe that that has some contribution to a lot of violence, actually, is lack of opportunity, lack of hope. And I'd like to know what your plan might be to actually accomplish that outside of going to, community focus groups and so forth in terms of job development and job training.
I definitely a strong proponent of enhancing funding for educational systems, particularly those school districts that are struggling financially because they don't have the adequate tax base to be able to support them. And we'll continue to be able to do that. During the Tom Wolf administration, we provided in excess of $1 billion back into our educational system and did it in a way that focused on some of those school districts that were struggling economically. I've worked closely, for example, with the Penn Hill School District to help them through their financial situation. They are now doing very, very well financially, and the students are doing well academically. We helped turn that good district around with the great school board work that was being done. Same thing in Woodland Hills, working in that school district in the city of Pittsburgh, with Wilkinsburg, creating an opportunity to bring the Wilkinsburg students into the city of Pittsburgh school district public school system worked well. Those are all, I think, positive steps that we've taken, but there's more we need to do. The CTE programs, I think we need to do more in that space to be able to provide, again, more programs in the schools for those students that necessarily don't want to go to college but want to focus on a career outside of going to a college or university. Those programs lead to employment, and that's what's important. But it all starts with funding the school districts in an appropriate, adequate way along those lines. I'm a believer that we need to take steps to deal with the fair funding formula. In Pennsylvania, we're taking small steps towards doing that completely with the school district budgets across the state in K-12. But again, it's difficult to be able to fully implement that plan because there's a lot of winners and losers through the school districts across Pennsylvania when we do that. Right now, as we speak, there is a court case in Commonwealth Court. Again, it's the fair funding court case, and that will go a long way to determining the formula that we use to be able to fund schools, whether it's equitable to all students in Pennsylvania. And that'll be a historic case that we're going to have to deal with and at some point in time need to pay the piper, so to speak. But I do think those programs in some of the school districts are very important that they do working with the students. And also the guidance the kids receive while they're in school is going to be important as well. It goes back to school counselors, sufficient number of school counselors in the schools to help guide children when they have to make some of these decisions during their lifetime. So those are some of the things that I think we need to do, but certainly growing jobs in the region and working to make certain that the jobs that are needed, the folks need the jobs, the entities that need the jobs, that the workforce is adequately prepared. I serve on a community college board and have done so for a lot of years. I'm a graduate of community college over in the Allegheny campus a lot of years ago, and I've been on the board for a number of years, and one of the things we're most proud of is the workforce training center that we're in the process of building over there, about a $60 million building all in. That's going to be a workforce training center for students, both at the community college, but students in the area who want to go and get a specialized training in some particular area. And the ability to work closely with industry, any particular industry that needs a cohort of workers that are specific to the skills that are, you know, what they need, the skills that they need to have them learn about, we're going to develop programs. We have flexible space that's going to be able to do that. It's those type of investments that we have to make to be able to create the opportunities for those folks who want to be a part of that. But it's access to these type of things, and it's opportunity that we have to incentivize these businesses to want to work with the universities and colleges and communities to be able to do more.
Wonderful. Thank you, Brenda, for your question. Next, we have Liz from Penn Hills. Liz, you're live.
Hi, Senator Costa.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Yes.
I wanted to thank you and your staff for doing this. Really appreciate it. Also, I wanted to ask you, aside from voting, what you think we can do as citizens to help change the tide toward reasonable gun legislation, including the banning of assault weapons.
I would certainly recommend communicating to your legislator, communicating to your county and your local representatives, your city council or your council or your board of commissioners, your county council, communicating to all your elected officials how you feel, and bring folks with you to do that, and do it in person and express to you them how you feel about these matters. I also think it's an opportunity to get engaged with a lot of these organizations that are out there that are fighting these crime situations, the gun control measures. A couple of the groups that come to mind are Moms Demand Action is one great group. Ceasefire is another group that are advocates, and they have a lot of, you know, volunteers who work with them to spread the word to their neighbors and friends and to build a coalition of folks who are like-minded in this space. And the more folks we do that, sort of the power of the people, is how I think we're going to be able to try, how we're going to address this going forward. Those are just a couple of things, but communicating with your friends and neighbors, the concerns you have, and working with these other organizations that I mentioned that do volunteer work, that come to Harrisburg and advocate, who go down to the city-county building and advocate, or county office building, or the county courthouse to advocate the county council. Getting folks engaged in a discussion, I think, is one way to be able to do it outside of voting, as I mentioned as well. There are ample opportunities, and getting supporting the community groups who are doing the work as well. As I mentioned, there are a number of, you know, community-based organizations that are not, they're nonprofits and the like, and they're not well-known large nonprofits like, or advocacy groups like two I mentioned, but they may be a bunch of dads working together to do good things, like the dads group that we know of. There's other, you know, women and men who've lost, children to violence. Those organizations, you know, being a part of that, those are the places I think folks can go to get engaged in advocacy to be able to make change.
Great. Next, we have Janice. Janice, you're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator Costa. Thank you for having the opportunities that we had for maybe cutting the letters and all that stuff. But what I was wondering, are they going to do anything for people that have mental illness? Because I think that's a problem, too. It's another problem, just not just a gun problem. And then do we have enough security in the schools? That's what I was going to say.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think they're two good points. Certainly we have to do more in the mental health space, and you know that's we're making those investments. We're going to increase those investments. The governor has made a recommendation of $36 million to restore the remaining pieces of what was cut back in 2011. That's going to be a part of it. I think we need to do obviously more than that. That would be more community-based programming and also more resources in our schools to provide counseling and the like in the school buildings, not just the district, but the school buildings. You know, that's, again, the disparity between the school districts and how much they have to spend. A lot of school districts don't have this problem. They have psychiatrists and counselors in every building. And some school districts have maybe one or two counselors or psychiatrists or psychologists to cover three or four buildings. That disparity has to change, and we have to fix, and we're working on doing that. So that's one part of it. The second part is that I forget the second part of your question. I'm sorry.
I was security in schools that you asked about.
Yes, security in schools. That's right. You know, we have a school security and safety grant program that we're driving resources out to all the school districts in Pennsylvania. I want to enhance that. I want to enhance it to do more. Some of it would relate to being used for a lot of it. Most of it should be used towards the school counseling, as I mentioned. But also, we know that a part of it needs to be used for purposes of enhancing security around the facility, around the building. You know, making certain that they have enough money to be able to have locks on the appropriate locks on the outer doors and the appropriate entry and exit systems there in place. I don't want to get to a place where one of my friends, colleagues, a chief, former chief police, you know, talked to me about fencing around the schools. And while it sounds, it will work, I'm sure. But I don't think we want our kids to have to travel through like a military base to go to school every day. I think that may be going too far, but I do think that we have to take some additional steps along those lines in hardening our schools. And that's what the original money was for. But our kids should not have to learn in the fortress, nor should they be learning in an environment where they're scared that something may happen in their school district or their school building. So we have to do more in that space. What exactly it looks like remains to be seen as we play it out. But there are a lot of things the school district can do to better protect, I think, and have a better security system in place. I know I worked here with our local police departments in the Woodland Hills School District working on the assault attacks, crisis intervention in terms of the police, in terms of how they respond, getting the programs that they need to be able to know exactly what when a situation arises, an active shooter situation arises in a school building, that they know the footprint of the building, they know all the details about where somebody might be, et cetera. Those type of things that we need to do, and those type of things folks need to be properly and well-trained. And I'm happy to report on our area here. I know our folks have gone through that and will be well-prepared, God forbid, something like happens. I hope it never happens, but, you know, you just don't ever know. Thank you for your call.
Next, we have Audrey. Audrey, you're live.
Hi, Audrey.
Audrey,
I can't.
She might have dropped off.
Yeah. Well, Audrey's question related to the South Side and what steps are we doing to address some of the would have been deemed to be speakeasies. What I can tell you is that we are looking to have greater impact and review by having more presence with local police, Pittsburgh police, and also with the Liquor Control Enforcement Agency of the state police, being able to do more in that space. And how they're going to go about doing it is, you know, obviously, you know, they have specific strategies that they'll employ, but they've been doing a good job trying to manage that. And really the problem is not inside the facilities. It's not inside the places. And the business owners, you know, get frustrated when we hear something happening. What's happening on the South Side is that folks, young adults, and, you know, a lot of people come from all around the city and the area. They converge on Carson Street, not going into the establishments in many instances, but rather just hanging out. Some instances they aren't established, don't get me wrong, but when they come out of those places and they interact with folks who came from other areas to just linger, that's when stuff happens. And that's what we're trying to prevent from happening going forward.
Great. We'll move
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you ready for the next call?
Yeah, let's do the next one. Then we can go back to the other calls that came in earlier
okay.
Today.
Perfect. Next we have Roger. Roger, you're live with Senator Costa.
We may have lost Roger.
Oh, yeah. Roger David. Yeah, I'm Roger David. I'm here. How are you, Senator?
I'm well, thank you, Roger. Thank you for your service. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I was concerned about the banning the weapons, the assault weapons. I was in Vietnam, and I know how deadly those assault weapons can be because I witnessed firsthand what a machine gun can do to people. And I think it's tragic the things that occurred in Texas and in Buffalo, and how those kids got those weapons. And I just wonder if there's a way that you can vote out those people, those senators and those congressmen who are not taking action about those assault weapons. And my question is, can they be voted out of office? And is there anything that can be done about that?
Well, yes, they can be voted out of office when their election's up. Some of them in the Congress who do not support the gun reform measures that went through Congress yesterday and today, I think, certainly those folks can be voted out of office. They're up every 2 years. But in U.S. senators, depending upon what year they are, they too can be voted out of office for not doing anything. But I do think that we had an assault weapons ban in the past, and I think it's appropriate now, especially given where we are right now. But your point about witnessing it in Vietnam is really telling, because I saw a news story on whether CBS or ABC last week about the difference in terms of the bullets that pass through a person and the destruction that these assault-type bullets due to a person's body. It's remarkably different and destructive. And to think that these are the type of things that went through the bodies of these young kids in Uvalde, it's incomprehensible. But you're right. You saw it firsthand. You know exactly what how these things are weapons of destruction aimed to kill a group of people at one time. And I can't argue with anything you're saying. So thank you, Roger. And thank you for your service, as I mentioned.
Okay, we'll go back to some of our pre-submitted questions. Jamie from Point Breeze asked, why can't cities like Pittsburgh just enact their own laws like the ones you're talking about doing for the state?
You know, that's a great question. That's something that I'm very supportive of, eliminating the state preemption on local on firearm laws. Representative Dan Frankel of Pittsburgh and Squirrel Hill has been at the forefront of that conversation. We're pushing it in the Senate side that, you know, places like the city of Pittsburgh should be able to protect their own folks. That's one of the highest charges of elected officials, particularly the local level, is to protect your citizenry. And that's an important thing that we need to do. What we have in place right now is a state law that says state law preempts local law. And that we're trying to change that to allow local governments to be able to do that. The pushback has been that given that we have 200 or 2,500 different municipalities in Pennsylvania, the pushback has been that there are a number of, you could have one person in Allegheny County, for example, having 130 different jurisdictions. You could have 130 different laws on the books with respect to firearms, how you can carry, whether you need a permit or not. Whether you need to have it concealed, and whether you should have an assault weapon or not. All the, you can drive, driving to work, you can drive through three different municipalities, for example, and then have, one place be legal, one place be illegal, right? So that's the pushback that we get. But I think what overrides that is, we can have maybe a sort of a small number of uniform weapon laws on the books, I think, that would be helpful, given certain circumstances of a community. But we're trying to remove that exemption. And, in fact, on next week in the House of Representatives, as we speak, it is scheduled for a potential vote next week in the House Judiciary Committee. We will see whether or not Republicans, quite frankly, will support the measure. Democrats, no doubt, will. So it'll be interesting to see. There are a couple other gun reform measures, bills on the calendar for next week, and we'll see what happens in that case.
Great. And we have a comment from Rosalie from Wilkinsburg. She said, it scares us every day to send out kids out to play or to stop into a local convenience store at night sometimes. I know it's the bigger mass killings at schools that get all the attention, but gun crimes in our neighborhood streets is what worries me most.
You know, it's a great comment because you're exactly right. That is the part that we lose sight of. What gets all the attention, and rightfully so gets the level of attention it deserves, are the mass shootings. But, every day, every night, we, you know, wake up at whatever time we get up and we put on the morning news, we see somewhere in our region, in Pittsburgh, the city itself, or in our county, and in one of our neighborhoods, there's a shooting that takes place and taking the life of somebody. And a lot of times they're young lives. So that's scary. And a lot of times they're innocent victims. Certainly, as we know, happened on Memorial Day here in downtown Pittsburgh. Breaks your heart to think that those are the type of things that are going on, particularly when they're innocent bystanders. So, again, access to weapons is part of that. Community violence prevention programs, getting folks engaged in programs to keep them off the streets, get them out of the illegal activity that may be a part of that conversation. Those are the ways I think that we can prevent those type of things from happening. But, you know, we got to work hard to be able to ensure that we're reaching young kids especially. And I think that's the hard part. And, again, it takes resources to be able to do that. And we have resources to do it. Right now we are flush. We are flush with resources in Pennsylvania. By way of example, we have about $2.9 billion in a rainy day fund, which we won't touch. We have a budget surplus. Folks, I'll get this. By June 30th, the end of this month, we will have about $8 billion in excess revenue. That means we brought in, our revenues brought in more money than we projected a year ago, back last June around this time. $8 billion. That'll roll over into the future years. But we need to put a good bit of those resources into our communities to address this community violence. And beyond that, we have $2.2 billion remaining in American relief funds from the federal government, from the Congress. You know, Mike Doyle and Connor Lamb and others, the Democrats, and there was only Democrats but for one Republican from Pennsylvania who voted for it. They gave us lots of money to be able to spend. And we have until December 31st of 2024 to utilize those resources, or they go back into the pot or distributed to other states that can use them and will use them. So we have those resources available to us, and we should be making those investments in education and into our community violence prevention programs, into our schools and mental health programs, as well as looking at one issue that I think we hear a lot about that I'll just inject, and that's property tax relief. Those are some of the areas that I think we need to have a conversation about how to use those resources. Thanks, Jessica.
Yep. We'll go back to the calls now. We have Carolyn. Carolyn, you're live with Senator Costa.
Hi. I was just wondering what the climate is like in the legislature between Democrats and Republicans. I'm getting legislation through on gun reform.
You know, that's a great question. Nearly every Democrat, not all of them, but nearly every Democrat in my caucus support a series of gun reform measures that we put into place. And all the measures that we have introduced, I don't believe a single Republican has co-sponsored any one of those bills. And Republican leadership, which has control of this process over the course of the past several years, at least since 2018 after we had the Tree of Life situation where we did gun measures and we did hate crime measures, simply refused to bring those bills up for a vote. They ought not refuse. And it's heartbreaking, quite frankly. So the difference is, for the most part, Democrats support gun reform measures, reasonable and responsible gun reform measures, and most Republicans do not, but particularly Republican leadership, because they refuse to run these bills. On Monday, we introduced about seven different type of what's called a discharge petitions to force the legislature, to force the Judiciary Committee and the Senate to bring these bills up for a vote and then ultimately to the Senate floor. So we're going to begin fighting for those bills on the Senate floor beginning this Monday, and they deal with assault weapon bans, they deal with lost and stolen, they deal with emergency risk protection order, they deal with safe storage, they deal with the 72-hour waiting period, they deal with universal background checks, they deal with waiting, increasing the age of 21 for assault weapons, et cetera. So those are the series of bills that we've introduced as a group of Democrats that we're pursuing, and we would like to see votes on each of those measures, and we're going to talk about that over the course of the next 3.5 weeks in Harrisburg, because we break for our summer recess on June 30th, and our goal is to address that subject, and then beyond that, also look at the funding issues that we talked about, mental health, community violence, and also looking to address our hate crime legislation we've done as well.
Great. Next we have Lamont. Lamont, you're live.
Hello, how are you both? Yes, I'm there. How you doing?
Good. I'm well,
hello,
Lamont.
Senator Costa. How you doing? I'm doing well.
I'm doing well,
Senator
thank you,
Costa. Great,
yes,
great.
Sir.
Many years ago, I was working for a private company, and on this particular afternoon, some young guys, they seen my boss's father. He was out on a truck. So they had stole guns. And the father didn't go back out, so I went back out on the second run, and I was cornered in the hallway here in Pittsburgh, and well, they said it was an accidental shooting, but the young guy had a 38 and a 32, and I got hit with a slug, and I had to live like close to 17 years of my life with a bullet in my arm because they didn't want to move it out because they didn't want to damage me. And the reason why I'm saying that is because what can we do to try to prevent people who do have guns in their homes from either getting them stolen or not, you know, because sometimes we have had incidents this past year where there has been guns in households and there has been, I say, careless gun owners. And I think that personally that if you're going to own a gun, that you need to be held responsible for that gun for however long you have it, even if it's in the hands of someone else. And
no, you're exactly
as far
right.
As, right.
No, I agree with you very much. Yep,
thanks.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
No, Mike, you're right. I think we need to take steps to address that. That's one of the pieces of legislation would put a requirement that if you know that your gun was lost or stolen, you have an obligation to report it to authorities along those lines, because that's exactly what happens. And so we got to take steps to try to resolve that. And that's what we're working on. That's one of the bills that we're talking about right now. Thank you, Lamont.
Okay, next we have Joan. Joan, you're live.
Yes. Hello. My name is Joan Neal King, and I'm from Rankin. And I am listening. Gun control is very, very important. Also, mental health is important. But one thing that we can't overlook, and that is the family. The family is very important in each of those things. When I was a young girl, we had the Rankin Christian Center. They were family-orientated. We had volleyball games with the young and the old. There is also a program can train children to prepare for the job market. That needs to be instilled. There are many programs that could be done and taught at our center, which is the Rankin Christian Center. I heard you speak of the amount of money that was available. How can that money be funded into the Rankin Christian Center to bring the youth in after school, helping with lessons, teaching them life skills, teaching them respect and love for one another? I'm a retired school teacher, but I'm too old now to participate in these things because I'm 80-some years of age. But I know the things that work. I know people that can be involved if the amount of money was available.
Joan, thank you. I can't say anything better than how you just said it. I agree with you 100%. It's community organizations like Rankin Christian Center, Community Empowerment Center over in Homewood, and so many other ones that are out there that do great work. The resources that I'm talking about getting into the community for community violence prevention or community prevention, crime prevention programs, that's exactly the comprehensive nature of the work that they need to do. And many of them are doing it now. They get these resources by applying to the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency. We put resources sort of into that organization. They put them into different buckets for folks to apply. to do different things, but that's how that will work. There's an application process that they have to, you know, apply for these resources and make a case as to why they're the best organization to be able to do these type of programs. So these programs exist. They just don't have enough money right now, and that's what we have to do, add more resources to it. I've worked in the past with Rankin Christian Center. Some of the things that we've done were really less operating, more capital or physical plant things, but I'm always willing to work with Reverend there to be able to do more. I know in the Hazelwood area, I work with Reverend Tim Smith. We're doing some good things. His group that he has, Center of Life, they do good work. Again, it's comprehensive. It's weekends, it's evening, it's tutoring, it's whatever, it's music. These guys need the resources to operate these programs, though, and that's what we're trying to do. So there's more of them, and they can grow the number of programs that they're dealing with. So I agree with you. That's what we need to be able to do. And we need to incorporate the family, as you said. That's the key, in my opinion, to success, by having comprehensive, family-oriented, community-oriented programs. That's, and also mentors. Many kids, some lives, they may not have a full family component to it. And so someone needs to step in and play a particular role for that individual. That's where the mentors come into play. As I mentioned, there are a lot of good mentorship groups out there. There's the dads group. I'm drawing a blank on the full name right now, but they're very effective. They work hard, and they're reaching people. And that's what we need to continue to work on.
Great. Next, we'll go to Bernice from Penn Hills.
Hi, this is Bernice from Penn Hills, and I'm not sure how realistic this is, but is there a way that there could be more metal detectors where there's large groups of people? It was mentioned before that a lot of the people on the south side just come to hang out outside. Something similar to, like, when the police will set up roadblocks when there's high drinking activities. I know that would be costly. We talked about, or I heard you talk about, funding for various programs. Is that realistic?
Some of the bars and taverns, I mean, they do a good job, I think, preventing folks from bringing weapons into their establishments. In some of these instances, as I mentioned, the issues don't come from the bars. And setting up checkpoints, certainly we can do it for DUIs. We do it, but doing it or having metal detectors in some of these places, could be problematic. But doing a checkpoint for weapons, I think, I'm not quite sure how we would accomplish that. There's so many intersections to get in and out of, unless we fence off the south side and only let people in one way. There's so many other, it'd be very difficult to put something like that up. And also, I'm not quite sure that we have the ability to check for weapons. Because folks have a right, particularly if you have a concealed weapon permit, you have the right to carry that weapon. So that might be difficult to do. But working with our local bars and restaurants, there's more that can be done in that space to help them, again, getting the resources they need to be able to put some of these metal detectors or the like there. Now knowing that, but our school kids go through them, so it makes you wonder, particularly some of our high schools, you got junior high kids going through metal detectors, you think, what's going on here? But that's the reality. And so, listen, we got to try something, because what we're doing now, particularly in some of these areas, are not working right. But thank you, Bernice. I appreciate the call.
Great. I think we have time for one more question. Before we go to the callers, we do have a sort of question from Marcia, not related to the discussion. She did say she really appreciates this call. She is struggling with getting funds as a homeowner to pay bills and wants to know if there's someone she can talk to, wondering if she can call your office, Senator Acosta, and get some more information on that.
Yes, absolutely. She can call our office, 412-241-6690. Maybe in this case, ask for Molly in the office here. Molly will be able to take the information and try to find some ways to help you. There are some different programs that can assist folks, depending on what they are. If they're utility issues, we can reach out to some of the utility programs. There are other ways in which we could be helpful, connecting you with human service programs that will be able to help her with food, for example, through the food bank, all those type of things. We can figure out a way to be able to do that. But anyone on our staff could be able to do it. But I think Molly would be someone who would be a great help to you.
Great.
We have about a couple other, I think we have one or so questions remaining, if I'm not mistaken, just from the folks who called in with questions, right? Do we do all those?
We have a few callers left on the line.
Okay. Well, let's try to do them real quick. We'll run through them, and then I know we're running out of time, but I'll shorten my answers. How's that?
Okay. We'll see how we can do. Next, we have Larry from Verona. Larry, you're live.
Yes.
Hi, Larry.
Get rid of the Second Amendment. Hi. Let's just get rid of it. It doesn't work. It's been there 200 years. It's archaic. No other country in the world has something like that.
I'm not ready to get rid of the Second Amendment right now, Larry. I think folks deserve the right. Reasonable and responsible gun owners have the right to possess. I think it's the ones who are not responsible, as it relates, was mentioned earlier by one of the callers, about lost and stolen weapons. It's about access to them, and we need to do a better job limiting access in situations where folks who should not have weapons that do. That becomes the issue, but I'm not ready to get rid of the Second Amendment yet, but I do think that we have to have a conversation about reasonable limits on what we mean by the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment did not, in my view, mean that we could have, citizens should have the right to assault-type weapons that we have now. You know, again, we're over 200 years ago that was put into place. I don't think they contemplated these type of military-style weapons in the hands of civilians that decapitate young kids. Let's face it. That's what we're talking about here. So that's how I believe. So, but thank you for your comment.
Great. And next we have Pat from Swissville. I think it's more of a comment that Pat has. But, Pat, you're live.
Okay. Hi, Senator Costa. I don't really have a question. I just want to get this off my chest here. Like some of the other people who have been talking to you, I really think there needs to be a national ban on assault weapons. Mm-hmm. They are designed to kill people, and they're not the weapon of choice for defending your home or to hunt deer or something like that. If you need an assault weapon to kill a deer, then you need a new hobby, like maybe knitting. So I really, and this is the perfect time to have a national ban on assault weapons because we could send those weapons to Ukraine where they really could use them. Other than that, I think, you know, guns should be treated like cars. They should be registered. You should have to undergo training about how to use it, how to be safe with it. And people should have to have insurance if they have a gun.
Yeah, those are good points. I think, you know, there's no reasonable explanation to me why a civilian should have an assault weapon. And I think it should really be addressed at the national level, as it was years ago. The assault weapon ban expired a number of years ago, and we've not had our elected leaders at the federal level have not had the courage to do something, nor have our Republican counterparts in Harrisburg. And let me be clear, Republicans have controlled the General Assembly. And I don't mean to be partisan here, but this is a fact. They control the General Assembly and have done so for the past, you know, I've been there a number of years, 20-plus years. They've controlled it for over 20 years and have yet to move any type of these reasonable gun reform measures that we're talking about today. After countless experiences in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, the Tree of Life, of course, but also in other parts in Lancaster, and then what we saw at Sandy Hook, and we saw at Parkland, and we saw, you know, more recently in Uvalde. If that doesn't move you, I don't know what does. So, any event, I'm hopeful, I'm very hopeful that over the course of the next couple of weeks, we do more in this space. On behalf of our Senate Democrats, we're advocating, as I mentioned, we have four pillars that we're going to be advocating for. Certainly the gun reform measures that I just talked about tonight, many of them will be part of that conversation. I talked to you all about looking to make more investments in mental health programming, both in the community and also in our schools. And we have vehicles in place and programs in place. All we need to do is act. If we don't act, we can't do it. But we have the resources, we have the money, we have the program to distribute the dollars, and we just have to have the will to be able to do it. And finally, we didn't talk much about hate crimes, but that too is a problem, especially in Pittsburgh and across Pennsylvania. There's more information we need. We need the ability to do more in that space, and we're going to work towards that end. So those are our four pillars for the next 3 weeks that we're going to be advocating for on the Senate floor on all of your behalfs. So, Jess, thank you. I guess that's our time, right?
I think that's a great way to end it.
Yep. Well, thanks, everybody, for participating in our town hall tonight. I really enjoy doing these. It gives me an opportunity to talk to a couple hundred people and have this engagement all at one time. And thanks to all those folks who've listened. Thanks for those folks who asked questions. Thanks for your patience if you didn't get your question answered. We have it. We will get an answer to you along those lines. And then finally, look forward to having our next conversation at some point in the very near future, a similar type call. So thanks, everybody. And Jessica, thank you for your time tonight as well. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And as a reminder, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for Senator Costa to get back to you. For any questions, you can always call his district office at 412-241-6690. Thank you again, Senator, for joining us, and thank you for all the listeners. Have a great night.
Bye.